session number 10385, rule 2.
Mr. Habberton, rule 2.
Well, I was going to put in the exact word because we didn't do anything much, really. We had to cook our own food because you fed by vehicles. There were no cookouts or anything like that. We cleaned rifles and it was a sort of waiting game. There was one thing we were told to do, and I always remember it because it was the first thing that happened, seriously. There had been a Sherman tank knocked out on D-Day, and about a mile away there was an 88mm gun which had also been knocked out. And we were told to walk over and study this as a point of, from the point of view of tactics and so forth. What had happened? This Sherman tank was advancing on D-Day. The 88mm gun had spotted it, taken a shot at it and blown it up. There were no survivors. The tank behind this Sherman saw the 88 gun fire at the Sherman. It's about a mile away. So the tank took a shot at the 88mm and destroyed that, together with the crew. And we had to go and look at this. And I remember clearly walking out, first to look at the tank, then across to the 88mm gun, and thinking to myself, well, this is a bit balmy, really. The tank crew's all gone. The 88 gun crew's all gone. So that quits. And the tank that shot the 88 gun, presumably, he carried on. And I realised then the sort of things, the way things happened. It's difficult to put into words, but that was the first sort of contact with what you might call reality.
With battle.
When you realise that tanks, they may have looked very large and impressive, but they could go up just like that. And there's this sort of tit-for-tat kind of thing. Anyway, that was just one of the things that happened there. And after about a week, we went into our first do. That officially, I think, was called Operation Epsom. And it wasn't very pleasant, because we had some very, very rude awakenings. I mean, I'm talking off the record here. This isn't just what I felt, but I think what all of us felt at the end of Epsom, a lot sadder and a lot wiser, because the enemy was a very real one, and not a sort of, there's no question of walkover or anything like that.
Did you know what the objective of Operation Epsom was?
We were well briefed. The idea was to capture a bridge over the River Odon and then move on towards Caen. And as far as I can remember, somebody else was coming the other way and we were going to link up with them. That was the idea. It didn't actually work out. But I can remember quite a lot about this four-day battle because it was the first one we'd ever encountered. We lost a lot of men on it.
Can you tell me in detail what happened in those 4 days as far as you were personally concerned?
In that particular one, yes, I can, because, as I say, first one, we start off in the morning. It was raining. It was an overcast, wet day. And again, it was very similar to an exercise. We were in our vehicles, I was in my carrier, the wireless was on, listening for instructions, and we just followed the convoy. When we got to crossroads, the red caps were there, just as they were in Yorkshire, pointing the way and so forth. And we drove in this fashion for much of the day. Once we stopped near a lot of battered French railway carriages, and a Scotsman was coming back with some German prisoners, and he was swearing and cursing at them to encourage them to get a move on. But being a Scottish man, I didn't quite understand what he was saying anyway. And I thought, well, they can't be that far away if they're prisoners walking about. But there were no shots or anything like that, you know. It was a scheme, but we had real-life German prisoners coming back from somewhere or other.
What was the manner of the German prisoners?
Pardon?
What kind of manner did the German prisoners have?
Well, they just... they were running... I think they were a bit worried about this Scotsman behind them with his rifle butt. They didn't take any notice of us. And on they went, you know. There weren't that many of them, because there was one man probably about 20 or 30, something like that. We didn't pay all that much attention to them, just sort of casually observed it. But the whole thing at that time was very casual. We saw some jeeps coming back with wounded men on them, because they used jeeps as forward ambulances. Again, it was interesting. We had no, I had no sort of particular worries or anything like that. And then, sometime in the early evening, we came to a place outside a village, and it seemed to be a bit chaotic. There were hordes of infantrymen burrowing into the side of the road. There were jeeps and tanks and people all over the place. There were no red caps to tell us where to go or anything like that. And I remember thinking to myself, what the hell's going on? And then all of a sudden, I realised exactly what was going on, like everybody else. There was a loud crack fairly near the carrier, in a barn near where we were stationary. The roof caught fire, and I then realised that the village was under shell fire, and so were we. And at that stage, I was really frightened. All the casualness and the arrogance, call it what you like, sort of evaporated. Oh, cool. We are now the target. And I remember also a message coming over the wireless from Porky, company commander.
What was his proper name?
Major Cunliffe, DFC. A good bloke. Nevertheless, we were all, I've used the word scared of him, but we full of respect. So you're still Porky.
He was in command of the battalion, was he?
He was in command of our company, not the battalion. This was a company. A wireless operator in a company doesn't know what's going on in the battalion. You're only in net to your company commander and so forth. Well, his orders came through. I'm going on a special mission. Number 7 platoon, follow my truck. The remainder, turn to right and deploy on the shoulder of ground to the right. At that stage, 7 platoon were in front of us. They followed straight on. We turned right, as ordered, onto this. And then there was another loud crash and some flame, a lot of screams and shouts. and we realised that something had gone badly wrong. Well, as wireless operator, I could hear Porky's operator trying to contact number 7 platoon, whose call sign was Oboe 3. Oboe 3, report my signals. And he was getting no reply. I realised that Oboe 3 probably no longer existed because of this, they'd been hit. And this went on for ages. Oboe 3, Oboe 3, and no reply. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, shut up, for goodness sake, surely you can realise that they're not there. But eventually, another platoon commander came on the air, and he said, I have 7 badly shaken survivors from number 7 platoon. The remainder are wiped out. You'll have to send another platoon. So eventually, Porky came back on the air and he said, well, I want 6 platoon to go. They'll have to proceed on foot because the road is now blocked by the burning half tracks, ones that have been hit. And prepare Piat's for action against Tigers. I remember him saying that. Piat was an anti-tank gun that you carried. Anyway, 6 platoon went in on foot wherever they had to go. We just sat in the carrier. And at that time, there were tracer bullets flying around up in the air. There was shelling going on. It was not very comfortable. Eventually, it got dark, and we went into what's called Liga with the tanks. A Liga is where the tanks form 4 sides with guns facing in all directions. And you go in the middle, you know, a chicken protecting its young. Well, we went into this Liga, because it was by then pitch dark, it was wet, and we were told that the London Scottish would be putting in an attack on the village at 4:30, no, or in the early morning sometime, at dawn. Then we ourselves would have to rouse us at 4:00.
So, do you know the name of this village?
Sure, Cheux. Nastiest village in Normandy, that one. We eventually went to sleep in our vehicles, where we were, in a bed or anything. And at 4:30 we got up and we drove somewhere outside the village. The sun was shining. It was a nice morning. And again, Porky was standing in his scout car and we were all told to have a meal and wash and shave. We were ordered to. Which we did. And having done that, we felt much better again. Confident, I don't know, and there was an army plane, a small artillery spotting plane, hopping about over the hedge, and there was a Messerschmitt buzzing about, and it all seemed, the previous night was almost like a dream. We were once again confident.
Had you slept during the night?
Pardon?
Had you slept during the night?
We slept, yeah. Well, in those few hours remaining, yes. You just doze off. Then we formed up again, and we drove through Sher. That was a bit of a mess. There were people all over the place, been killed and what have you. It was quiet, there were no guns fired or anything like that. And
so there were bodies that hadn't been removed?
Oh yeah, well presumably from the morning. I mean it was only a few hours afterwards I mean, they get removed later on, but this was too soon. Again, I don't think we realised that we were... There was nothing in front of us except the Germans. It didn't quite sink in, because everything looked quite normal. Farmhouses, the sort of country we were used to. You didn't quite visualise it as a sort of front line, because it was moving all the time. Nothing fixed.
Were these dead bodies from your unit? Or
not from ours, no. I think they were probably London Scottish that had gone in to get this village, I would think. I couldn't tell you from the time to look. We drove through the village, and then we parked, or what do you like to call it, all the way round an orchard. Sergeant Major came round, asking, seeing everyone was all right. Yes. Anyway, he went back to his corner of the field, and then all of a sudden, we were mortared. No warning or anything, we just sat in the carrier. Clods of earth came flying in. Couldn't do a thing about it. Just, well, eventually it stopped.
Where did you take shelter?
Didn't take shelter, just stayed in the carrier. The bring-in carrier. To keep your head down, there's nothing else you can do. There's nowhere to shelter. And the carrier itself is lightly armoured. It is some protection, a brain carrier, although it hasn't got a roof. We looked around when all this stopped, and there was a bit of a mess in the corner of the field where the Sergeant Major was. A number of people lying on the ground, our own people. And the order came through then that we were to move into the centre of the field, not get strung round the orchard. So we moved into the centre of the field. Then the next thing we knew, we were shelled again.
So shelled or mortared?
I'm not sure whether they were, somebody said they were shelled, somebody else said they were mortared, but quite frankly, I can't remember which they were. Could have been either. And this went on for some time. We did exactly the same thing, just put our heads down inside the carrier, hope you won't get hit. Well, we weren't. Our carrier wasn't, anyway. And we sat up again and stayed there. But apparently, after that, we were told that the tank chaps had spotted the positions that were firing at us, and they turned their guns on them. And after these positions had been, the expression used is, softened up a bit, one of our own platoons went in on foot to deal with them. And this particular platoon went in. By the time they got there, they were all a bit dazed, and those that weren't killed and so forth, they surrendered and were taken prisoner. Well, on that little sort of occasion, our Sergeant Major was killed. All the DRs, except one, who's still alive today, a friend of mine, and quite a mess one way and another, as far as our own men were concerned. Well,
So when your platoon went in, who was it who was captured? The Germans?
The Germans. These chaps that were giving us trouble. The tanks, you see, having fired at them with their heavy guns. And then our fellows went in. Well, I mean, not a lot of point. I don't know what they could do after they'd been subject to that. I remember then walking over to one of the other chaps. He was Porky's driver, and he was pouring some brown-coloured stuff from a tin into a jug or a mug or something. I remember saying to him, water's a bit rusty, isn't it, Bart? He says, not water, you chump, it's Calvados. So I said, well, where the hell do you get that? Oh, we found it down a cellar. He said, the barrels of it down there. So I said, well, you bloody fool. I said, the place might have been booby-trapped. Well, he said, I'm still here, aren't I? Actually, you're still here today. Well, I suppose you are, yeah. So I said to him, how do you know the Jerrys haven't poisoned it? So he said, I don't know. Let's try some. Okay. Pour some out. So we had several of us there, and he started pouring this Calvados into pint mugs. Not pints of it, but so we were drinking. Horrible stuff. No need to poison it. Want some more? Yes, okay. Well, in the middle of all this, Jackie, who was Porky's wireless operator and my boss, comes along in a bit of a flat spin. I said, look out, what's up now? So he looks at me, what are you doing here? None of you bloody operators are where they ought to be, and Porky's doing his nut because we've got to move in 5 minutes, move soon, and there's no one on the air. I said, move? We've only been here 5 minutes. Never mind that. He said, probably said, oh, forget all that. Come on, have some Calvados, have some grub. You know, we all very jovial. And he took a dim view of this and told me to stop effing about and get back on the set and quickly and all that sort of thing. I didn't really believe we were going to move quickly. I thought we could treat this as a joke. But obviously it wasn't. And then, oh, fair enough. Went back to the caravan, thinking of, to the, not caravan, carrier, thinking, well, maybe there is a move in the offing, and if that is the case, and I'm not on the air, it'll behoves anybody to upset the Pork at any time. We'd better get on the carrier and on the air. So back to the carrier and back to netting signals. But of course, by that time, I was feeling a bit sick from the Calvados. And I knew what I was doing, but all a bit vaguely, if you know what I mean. Anyway, we moved on. We eventually got strung out along another orchard. Big open fields, very fresh and clean. And yet somehow or other, it seemed a bit sinister. Can't say why. Just don't know why it did. An order came round that we should cook ourselves a meal and wait for further orders. Well, we decided we'd do nothing about the cooking order for our carrier.
Why not?
We just felt uneasy. I can't tell you why. There was a peculiar kind of something suspicious about the place, and we sort of thought if we start getting all the cookers out and this kind of thing, and we have to either move or something start, it'll be wasted. You know, we'll hang on a bit and see what happens, if anything happens. We'll think about that later. Well, actually, we were right, because a quarter of an hour after that, we were mortared. No trenches had been dug. I remember diving into a ditch at something in this orchard, and another two or three men dived on top of me, and the thing was full of stinging nettles, but nobody worried about that. Eventually the mortaring stopped. Then we got up, one of our half tracks was on fire, and people were all over. It was total chaos. The only way I can describe it. It was just chaos. Nobody knew what the hell was happening or anything. And we spent the whole of that night sorting ourselves out and getting into some sort of proper military order.
Did you dig in?
We dug slit trenches as well and so forth. And in the morning, it was grey and overcast, and we could see, not far away, air bursts, the black puffs of air bursts, their enemy ranging shots. They weren't over our head, but they were. There was a small hill nearby, and actually this hill has become one of the most notorious hills of the whole campaign. It was called Hill 112. We didn't know that, at least I didn't know it at the time. I did once we got up there, where we sat around. I think we had something to eat for breakfast and just sat in the carrier. And then our carrier was ordered to the top of this hill.
Had you been properly arrested the night before?
No, we'd been up all night trying to sort of chaos out after this mortaring.
What time of day did the mortaring take place?
In the evening sometime, before it was dark, but not very much before it was dark. It caught everyone on the hop. This kept blooming well happening in the first do. Overconfidence. Although we had at least our crew, I dare say there may have been others, we felt uneasy about this place without knowing why. Well, we were sent up to the top of this hill. Well, there wasn't a road, it's all in the country, so you're on track vehicles across fields. Well, the route up there was under shell fire. And immediately we arrived, three came over. We again ducked in the caravan, and they went off on the right, to the right of us. And some of our own platoon got clobbered by those, and they were shouting for stretcher bearers. Well, we were, but there weren't any stretcher bearers, because apparently, I learned afterwards, that the commanding officer would only allow two brown gun carriers per company to act as ambulances because it was too far forward for ambulances proper to operate. I mean, they couldn't come, they're soft vehicles, you see. And to have given more for that purpose would have meant taking them out of action. And apparently the position was critical. We didn't know it, but it was. Well, anyway, we moved on to the top of this hill, and then I think the rest of the platoon, as far as I can remember, and the company joined us, and then we dug in. And we dug a really good trench, of about four of us got together, and we dug a prize beauty.
Whereabouts on the hill?
On the top of Hill 112.
Right at the top?
More or less, yes.
What was your platoon, by the way?